traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Good afternoon, equestrians. This is Scott Miller coming to you live from Delray Beach, Florida, home of the sunny horse shows, sunny horse racing, sunny horse sales. Everything's sunny here, except for today, and it's raining. Going to talk to you a little bit today about the Kentucky Derby. It's going to be a lengthy discussion today, but there's a lot I want to get across to you. And this transcends to all of the sports of horse racing, horse shows, horse everything. There's one common theme, and people, you know, they just think, oh, well, you know, it's the first Saturday in May, you know, it's a horse race, you know, it's this, it's that, but it's more to it than just that. And that's what I want to talk to you about. The key word when I think about horses of all breeds, all disciplines, I think about tradition. You go back to the days of the cowboys, the guys that come up, moving cattle, AQHA, everything. It's all about tradition, and especially this week as we get into the tradition of standard bred racing. They had the little brown jug, and they had the jugette, and it's something that's gone on for years. They get 30,000-40,000 people to Delaware, Ohio. It's a tradition there, one of the traditions that they have. And as if you go to the races, to the Hambo, to the jug or to the jugette, the tradition is to take a lawn chair with you. You take a lawn chair with you, you set it around the track, you go to all the festivities, you watch everything, you do everything, and then when you leave, you go take your chair and you walk up to the chain link fence around the track and you tie your chair to it with your name on it. And then next year when you come back, you can go get your chair, take it back to your spot. It's like a reserve seating for the next year. And those are all, there's all kinds of traditions that go in the horse industry. And that's just one of the many, you know, that we're talking about. That's for the standard breeds. It's really a big thing to do, you know, and it's a tradition. And same thing, you know, with the Kentucky Derby. There's a lot of tradition in the Kentucky Derby that people really don't realize. And what's happened, the Kentucky Derby is a chance of a lifetime and a lifetime of chance that these horsemen go through. And you don't have to be a trainer or an owner or a jockey or a groom or a hot walker. All you got to do is be a horse enthusiast, a horse lover. And there's a lot of traditions that go along with the Kentucky Derby. And we're going to talk about those today. When you get down to it, and this is why tradition has started, is because of the age of the Kentucky Derby. It inaugurated in May 17th, 1875. It's for thoroughbreds. The sponsor of the Kentucky Derby this year is Woodford Reserve and Brown Foreman. They always have to have big sponsors. The race is a mile and a quarter, which is 10 furlongs or 2 kilometers. The track record was held by Secretariat at 159.4. That was in 1973. In 1889, a horse by the name of Spokane won the Kentucky Derby. It was at a mile and a half. The only time it's been run further than a mile and a quarter was 2:34. The surface is dirt. It's a left-handed track. To qualify for the Kentucky Derby, you got to be a 3-year-old. The weight for colts or geldings is 126 pounds or 57.2 kilograms. For fillies, it's 121 pounds, 55 kilograms. The purse money is $3 million. It's $1,860,000 to the winner. It's a lot of money. Then when you think about it, you do all kinds of things to get you there. It's just amazing how people look at you know, these things, and they get enthused, they go to it. They're not even horse people, but it's just a tradition that's there. The tradition at the Kentucky Derby, you know, goes way back from the very beginning of it. In 1872, Meriwether Lewis Clark Jr., the grandson of William Clark of the Lewis and Clark Expedition, traveled to England visiting Epsom in Surrey, where the Derby had been running annually since 1780. From there, Clark went to Paris, France, where he where a group of racing enthusiasts had formed the French Jockey Club and had organized a Grand Prix at Longchamp, and it started there. So, you know, a lot of things, you know, are coming from old school. You know, this is, and it's been refined over the years as they go to, and that's what we're talking about is tradition. Now, like for me, for example, the tradition is that I start watching all the Derby prep races starting in September, right on through the first Saturday in May. And I'm telling you, it's fun because it's something that I do every weekend. I can get family and friends together. We barbecue, you know, enjoy the time together, and we watch the races. And you know, that's a tradition that I started back when I was very, very young. One of the traditions we had in our family is my father would take us over to Churchill Downs. Even though children couldn't get into the track over there, he drove us over to Churchill Downs, and we rode around the many, many blocks around Churchill Downs, and we could see the people parking their cars and barbecuing out in the yards and, you know, walking over to the track, and we'd actually drive by the track. So that became our family tradition. You know, even though, like I said, we couldn't go in, but it's something that we did. We were a part of the Kentucky Derby, and we liked that, you know. And for a kid, you know, that was exciting. And then as I got older, you know, I was able to go over to the track and pretty much do the same thing Derby week that we did. Now, like in my family, our whole big thing was to get the yard and the house and everything all together, mow the grass, you know, water the flowers, make it look good, get the picnic table set up, and, you know, and get ready for Derby weekend. And then we would have a Kentucky Oaks party, a Kentucky Derby party, had friends over, and, I mean, it was just really tradition, and then watching on TV. You know, that was a good thing. And back in the day, we just had a little bitty old black and white TV, and the radio coverage was actually better than the television coverage, you know, that we did. But again, it goes back to the traditions that you set forth. And then when I got older and got out on my own and started doing those things, I pretty much held to the same, you know, regiment there with my traditions. And the thing that I liked about it is I did what my family and friends were doing, but then I had my own, you know, thing that I set up, my own traditions that I did. And so I've been following those until this day. And then when I went to work on the racetrack, you know, it became a little different, but I still had Derby traditions, you know, of you know, having a good barbecue and you know, get-togethers and everything. And a lot of times it was really tough to do because we had horses running on Derby Day, some in the Derby and some in other races, you know, on the day before. But so you kind of get into a routine. And so that's what I was telling my friends about. I said, tradition at Derby every year. Everybody has a different tradition. They do different things, but that tradition is there. It's been in, you know, the Derby since 1875. And those traditions started then, and they've carried on until, you know, present day. So I was thinking this year, what can I do add to my tradition that's this year? And I still haven't figured it out yet. You know, I'm thinking on it a little more. But the tradition is there. You know, we're talking about food, we're talking about friends, we're talking about people taking vacations. You know, we're talking about a lot of different things. And it can get pretty intense because some of my friends that come and join with me in my traditions that I do, they're not real horse people. I mean, they are. You know, they like horses. But they really don't get into it, you know, like I do. They come in, and the week of the Derby, they read in the paper about this horse, that horse, and they pick their favorite, and they got their favorite jockey, and they got their favorite trainer, and favorite owner, and, favorite horse, you know, that type of thing. And then we start talking about memories of Derby's past, you know, who won a big, a lot of money, you know, who had the big horse in the race, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, there's so much there that you can do, and it never gets boring, by no means. Does it get boring? And so, you know, now that I'm older and can look back, I spend a lot of time reflecting on the derbies that I participated in, derbies that I, you know, didn't participate in. And so it's kind of nice to do that kind of relaxing, you know, type of thing to do. And one of the big traditions that they have is food. They have food. Kentucky Burgoo, it's a great soup, stew-like type thing. Got chicken, pork, you know, barbecue in it. It's really good. And so a lot of people do that. You know, the barbecuing, pork chops, steaks, hot dogs, hamburgers. It's not so much the food that you're barbecuing, it's the fact that you're barbecuing. You know, and you got all the different things that go with it. You know, like one of the best treats you'll ever have is called the Derby Pie. And it's a secret recipe by a company in Louisville. And when you go to Louisville, you want to get one. And I'm not kidding you. If you want a Derby Pie at Derby time, you got to order that thing 6 months in advance. You know, and then stop by and pick it up, and it's really a great tradition there, and it's the Kentucky Derby Pie. And then, you know, we also have the mint julep. Various ways to make it. People have different ways to make it. But that's your tradition, is the mint julep. So everything, you know, goes there. The roses is your tradition in Kentucky at the Kroger grocery store in Louisville. They actually make the garden of roses that goes over the winter. And that's a television program that comes on before, Derby week. And, it comes on, I believe, on Thursday. And Friday and Saturday, you know, they go through the process. And it's really kind of neat, you know, to see that, how they do that. It makes you really appreciate it when they put it across the horse's back, you know, and when they won the Derby. You know, so that's another tradition. They've got balloon races there Derby week, where they have a multitude of hot air balloons. It's better than the hot air balloon show in New Mexico. That's how good this thing is. The night before, it's on a Friday night, they have what they call light up the balloons. And what they do is they're tethered to the ground, and they go and they inflate the balloons. And it's in the dark, and you can see the flame go up into the balloons and, you know, how they're lit. And it's really, really a sight to behold. And then the next morning, early the next morning, all the balloons have a balloon race. And they have the hare balloon, which is the balloon that won last year's Derby balloon race. They go up, and they fly their balloons a few miles away. And then they sit down, and they drop a big old X on the ground. And then all the other balloons, they take off, and when they fly towards that X, they see who can get a bag of sand dropped onto the X. Whoever gets the closest is the winner. So, you know, that's your tradition to see there. And you see all kinds of balloons. You see them from Ford Motor Company. You see them from Coca-Cola. All these different sponsors, and it's really a beautiful sight, you know, to see. You know, take pictures at. So they have that. And that's what I like. They have the boat races between the Belle of Louisville and the Cincinnati Belle. And they race up and down the Ohio River. They go down a few miles, they turn around, and they come back up to the Second Street Bridge there in Louisville. And that's how they get the winter. So that's really something to see, something that's gone in days past, you know, really boat racing on the Ohio there, big paddle wheel boats, a lot of steam and smoke come out of them. It's really enjoyable to watch, you know, to watch them go up and do that. Then they have the parade. It's a great parade that they have there. I mean, you see bands and you see all different kinds of, you know, floats that are there in the Pegasus Parade. It's really nice. They have a tradition of bed races, and usually it's a lot of the beds in it are from the different hospitals. They're like a medical bed, and they got wheels on them. And the people that run it in the race, they dress up in their, like if they're nurses or doctors or attorneys, and wear suits, you know. The doctors wear their medical wardrobe. And they have four people on it, and they got one person in the bed. And they run down a couple of blocks down the street in Louisville, and you get a winner. And it's really a crazy sight to see because those beds aren't hard to control and hard to guide, you know. But that's really good. They got the bed race, you know, there. And people like that. Of course, they got the Pegasus Parade there. And they got bands from all over the country that come down to it, kind of like a Thanksgiving Day parade, you know, that they have there. They have the Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Derby. And what they do is they take these plastic ducks that you buy, and it's a charitable thing. They throw them in the Ohio River. They float down river, and then they start picking them ducks out, and you know, there's various prizes that are there for it. So that's really, really good. And then they have the Thursday before the Derby, they have the Thunder Over Louisville, they call it. It's one of the largest fireworks shows in the world. It lasts almost an hour long. It's on the Second Street Bridge. It's amazing. I've never seen anything like it in all my life. You see all kinds of fireworks. You see different patterns. They shoot one fireworks up, and it's the American flag, and it's red, white, and blue. You know, they got all kinds of things there. But more importantly, what everybody really likes is during the day they have the air show. And every aircraft that the United States of America has does a flyover in downtown Louisville. You see all kinds of different things, helicopters, jets, bombers, you know, you name it, you see it. But if it's an aircraft, it's in that show. And it's really good to go see, you know, it's great for photographers that you can go see. Photographers have a heyday with shooting the pictures of those airplanes that come through. And so, yeah, they got a mini marathon. That they have there. They got a hole-in-one golf tournament that they have. There's just so many things there to do, you know, when you're in Louisville. You got the Derby Museum over there that's very educational, and it's all, you know, historical things there. There's a starting gate. You can actually walk and stand in a starting gate that the horses start, you know, come out of in the Derby. You know, they have that. They've got videos from way back in the day. They've got all kinds of educational information there. They got a great gift shop. You know, if you're looking to get birthday presents or a Christmas present, you know, just a general, you know, hey, friend, thanks for being my friend present. They got those. Anywhere from horseshoes to paintings to you name it, they got it there that's Derby related, you know, to it. And so that's a part of a tradition that, you know, you can encompass into the museum. They give you a backside tour of Churchill Downs where you can go by and see the horses in the barn and see them training in the morning. They got breakfast at the Downs. That's their tradition. And they have morning works that we carry here on IENTV.org. We carry the morning works of the horses that are going into the Derby. It's an hour-long show that comes on in the morning 10 days before the Kentucky Derby and right up through the Kentucky Derby. And so those are the kind of traditions that, you know, that we do. And what I like about it is these traditions, they carry over to the Preakness. They do the same thing at the Preakness. They've got parades. They've got everything. You name it, they got it. And they do the same thing at the Belmont in New York. And the Preakness in Pimlico, is at Pimlico in Baltimore. And, you know, and they have their own traditions, their own food, their own style, their own swagger, as they say. You know, and they do so at Belmont Park. And speaking of Belmont Park, it's always in Long Island, in Elmont, New York, and this coming year, 2024 and 2025, the Belmont, it will not be held in Elmont, at Belmont Park Racetrack. They're moving it to Saratoga, New York, to have it in 24-25 up there, because they are renovating the track at Belmont, the grandstands. They're putting in a new Tapeta track, they're redoing a turf track, the main track. And they're just giving it a good overhaul. And it's going to be so fan-friendly. It's going to be just unbelievable. And they're doing the infield up. And it's going to be a sporting venue. They already have a hockey arena out at Belmont Park. And so New York is turning it into a sports complex, and which is good. Because now you've got tradition that's overflowing into you know, into Belmont Park, and it's going to be modernized and it's going to be good. And they'll still have the old tradition there, you know, New York with Frank Sinatra, and they still have all that. But again, everything you look at in life, when you think about it, is about tradition. And that's why I like being in the horse business, because we have the Triple Crown races, which is all tradition. Then we have Keeneland in the fall and the spring racing there. That's another tradition. That's a month-long party there at Keeneland in the spring and in the fall. And then we have the fall meet at Churchill Downs, which is really a good meet. The spring meet is the Derby meet. You know, so your traditions are there. And, you know, you have the same thing at Belmont and Pimlico, Del Mar in California. You know, it's by the sea, by the sea, by the beautiful sea, Del Mar is the place to be. That's their tradition. They incorporate, because they're on the ocean, and it's a great race meet to go to in Del Mar. It's unreal, you know, and you can do things that you normally couldn't do, you know, locally at any of these facilities. You know, it's best just to wait for the meets to get there. And so, you know, I'm sitting there thinking like, oh, this is crazy. And then this snuck up on me and I just started laughing. I said, my goodness. I said, how can I not see this coming? The Breeders' Cup was started to, recognize the breeders of the world, to let them know that they've done a good job. You know, that it wasn't just a race for three-year-olds. You know, it had a lot of variety to it. It literally brought all horses in the business together, from three-year-olds, two-year-olds that they have. There, they've got the three-year-old races, three-year-olds and ups. They got the grass races. They got sprint races. They got long races. They got every kind of race that a horse could run in is run during Breeders' Cup weekend. And it's usually the first Saturday or Friday and Saturday in November. This year it's going to be out at Santa Anita. So, be sure you inquire, either at intv.org or you go to, SantaAnitaPark.com and to see what they have. But the purpose of that is to get and recognize breeders that have worked hard year-round breeding horses to run, you know, and that could win and you know, helping perpetuate the sport of horse racing. So then all of a sudden, you know, in the last few years, talking to my friends at the Breeders' Cup, we said, hey, wait a minute, there's a tradition following here. You know, we got to get something, to have a tradition. And so one of the girls said, well, why don't we get a Breeders' Cup glass, just like they do at Churchill. They got the mint julep glass at Churchill. They got the Pimlico's got their glass, and Belmont's got their glass. And they're dated, and they've got all the winners of the races on them and everything. And so now, you know, Breeders' Cup said, okay, we'll start doing that and make it a tradition. Let people start collecting these things. So it's gone over real well over the last 10 years. I mean, really, really well. And so, you know, I'm sitting there thinking like, wow, look at this. And on my way home one day, I was thinking, well, you know, the Breeders' Cup, they got that now. So we got four big traditions now instead of just the three. You know, so it was exciting, you know, to be thinking about that. And then I was going through the drive-thru. I was grabbing something to eat at the Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I realized, I said, oh, my God, what about the Breeders' Cup? What's their food? They don't have a traditional food. You know, I'm sitting there thinking like, wow, let me put my numbers together and see what I can find out. It was simple. It was three little numbers, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, to Belmont. They all have traditional foods. Each race has their own traditional foods, their own traditional party. So I started writing down the different things. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to start a project here at International Equine Network, and we're going to take this to the nation, to the world. It's called Triple Crown Tradition. What we do is we go to Churchill Downs, and we have three people. We select an owner, a trainer, and a jockey. And we bring them together Derby Week, and we have a cook-off. They bring their family traditional food to the table. It could be beans and rice barbecue. It could be whatever their tradition is. Now, you're going to see a lot of these old trainers with some old-time, you know, food. What do they do for the Kentucky Derby? So we're going to tell their story. They're going to cook their meal. Then we'll do the same thing with the trainer. The trainer will have his tradition, what his family does, you know, for Derby. And then we'll have the jockey. The jockey, what they do for, you know, Derby tradition. So we got the owner, the trainer, and the jockey. We do the same thing at Pimlico. We have the owner, trainer, and jockey. Same thing at Belmont. We do the same thing. And out of those three people at each track, we're going to have one winner. It could be an owner, it could be a trainer, it could be a jockey, but we're going to have one winner selected by a celebrity judges from that local area. So in other words, we'll have people from Louisville, Pimlico, and Belmont will decide the winners. And then after we have the winners, the three winners, they will proceed on to the Breeders' Cup in November. So we'll have the champion from Churchill, the champion from Pimlico, and the champion from Belmont all showing up. And this will be at Del Mar in 2024. We will have the three winners compete against each other. And then when we get that winner, that will be our Triple Crown traditional cook-off champion. So I think it'll be exciting because we're getting people from all walks of life. You know, we could literally end up with, you know, three owners being at the Breeders' Cup, or we could have two jockeys and a trainer. You know, it could be a variety of them that we'll have there. And then we will have the Triple Crown Tradition winner will have his recipe published in all kinds of food magazines across the country and across the world. That's what we'll be doing with them. And so that's one of the things that, you know, we're looking at. And it's, and what it does is it helps the tradition of horse racing move along. You know, it gives people something to look forward, something extra other than just 2 minutes in sports. And, you know, it's funny how you have hundreds of thousands of people that show up at the races every year to go to these races. And, you know, it's for a 2 minute race. It's for a 2 minute race. How many things have you ever seen that could generate, you know, hundreds of thousands of people attending or going to and watching and participating in some way, shape, or form, in the horse racing? And that's your tradition that they do there. You don't see that in regular sports. You know, it's a social event. It's an athletic event. You know, it's a financial event. It helps everybody in every way. You know, the people of the communities and everything. And, you know, I know one lady, her and her daughters, just her and her daughters, they go to Kentucky Oaks, which is for the Phillies. And then they've got their tradition. They go to a local restaurant there in Churchill, and they just do the whole day of it. You know, and it's just her and her daughters. And see, that's a tradition that they do. I got friends, some guys that I know, and they like to go to the races, on Thursday, which it's the local for all the locals there. They call it Thurby. And that's where all the local people from the community get together. And the guys I know, they put on their suits and their hats, and they buy a couple of cigars. They go to the track and race, and then they go to their local sports bar after the races. You know, so those are like traditions that we're doing. But now we've got the Breeders' Cup tradition, you know, and it's really, really going to be good. And if I can work everything out right, the grand champion of the breeder of our Triple Crown tradition, we'll get two Kentucky Derby tickets to the 2025 Kentucky Derby. So we're already starting to talk to the sponsors about it, and I'm getting a real good response from them, you know, because it's going to be an international project. It's all going to be on TV. It's going to have a celebrity chef that's going to be the judge that actually has programming on TV now. So, you know, we have that. But, you know, it's all about the tradition that you do. In life. You know, the Triple Crown, it was a great thing, you know, to do. Each event, the Derby, Preakness, and Belmont are a good thing to do. And, you know, it's just like a year-round deal. You know, pretty much there's very few months that we're not racing and not doing anything. Like one of the traditions that one of my owners had, they got all the employees together for a Christmas party. And they would get their bonuses at Christmas time from all the hard work that they did, you know, for the owners. And so what they would do is, like, say if we had 30 foals that were born on the farm, you know, that year, what we would do is we would put the horse, the mare of the foal, we would put the mare's name in, and then everybody would pick a piece of paper out of there, and it would have the mayor's name on it. And you got to name the foe. You got to write a name down and put it on that paper and put it in there to see, what the foe's name would be. And a lot of them have turned out to be really good ones, you know, over the years. So that was a tradition that they do on the farm that everybody gets to do. Other traditions they have are sales, like the Keeneland sales today. It's on our website. It's live. We've got horses going for $2-3 million. You know, their yearlings are getting ready to start their career next year as a racehorse and, you know, go down the road with that. But, a lot of that tradition is, everybody gets together and they have like a big breakfast in the morning or a big meal at the end of the day. And talk about, you know, how much the horse is sold for and who bought what and, you know, who do you think's going to win, you know, run him, win the Derby, you know, and that's kind of like an all day tradition. It's like an all day sandwich deal, to be honest with you, because you're working the sale, he's taking care of the horses, you know, but she's still able to sit down and, you know, eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, so that's pretty good. And what I like about that is it's a sales. When you work the sales, you usually work for one of the consigners. And the consigner usually keeps everybody, the same crew, together every year. You know, they travel to the different sales in Kentucky, Florida, New York, California, Arkansas, Louisiana. These consigners try to keep the same people together and keep it, you know, like a tradition. You know, they know what to do, you know, with it. And so that's always pretty good. You know, but you see a lot of things that you do in your life, you know, become traditions. And I found that once you get traditions, you know, and to especially the horse business, it builds on the quality of the people that you're dealing with, your horses. They take pride in what they do. You know, they really love it. They, you know, they're proud of what they do, and, you know, they like going to the races, and they like going to the different parties and everything, you know, and it's a tradition. And when you get traditions, you usually can get a stable, pardon the pun, workers in your barn. You can do that. And because, you know, they're proud of what they do, they're proud of who they are, and they're glad to put on that farm, you know, racing colors or jacket, as they call it, you know, when they're there. And that's really, you know, what it's all about. And so now, you know, I said, well, I've opened up a can of worms now, because there's a lot of people. I had two people come up to me. One was an owner and one was a trainer. Don't be asking me for any old recipe. Don't be asking me for any recipe. I train horses. I work too hard. I got businesses going on outside of my horse business. My horse business is my hobby. Don't be asking me for a recipe. You know, that was 3 days ago. Today they brought me recipes. My great-great-grandmother, when we won the Kentucky Derby with Silver Charm, you know, those kind of stories that they had, you know, whatever horse they had running in the Derby, they had, you know, had that. And also, but, you know, it's all about the traditions that we have. And like I said, in our program, how they get there, we're going to be following the horses as of last week of the 17th. The 16th, we had the first qualifier for the Kentucky Derby. It was a good race, but it wasn't a bang-up race. I don't think we're going to see any horses that came out of the Iroquois stake race there in Churchill. I don't think there was a Derby horse in there. They were green. They were competitive. They were all about the same level. You know, they might surprise me, but I'll just tell you the history of the Iroquois. There's never been a Kentucky Derby winner come out of that race. So, you know, that's telling me that the race is a little too early. They push the horses to, a lot of the two-year-olds they push to get ready to run at Saratoga. Because if you got a win at Saratoga on your resume, that's really good as far as breeding, as the breeding aspects of it is, whether it's a stallion or a mare, that's always good to break your maiden at Saratoga. You know, and I saw quite a few good horses up there, but none of them showed up at the Iroquois. So that just kind of tells you, you know, it may be a little too early for these two-year-olds to be judgmental on them as far as the Derby's concerned. And then we got a couple more races that'll be coming up here that's on the Derby Trail. And the unusual part about it is that as you go down the road, to the Kentucky Derby there. This is the thing that I look for. I look for where these horses are running and when they're running. Now, the Iroquois was a good race. You know, it came up, it was at Churchill. That was back on 16th there. Then they had the Champagne in New York, which is another little test. but that's in the 1st of October. You got the American Pharoah, which is at Santa Anita. That's October 8th. Then you have the Breeders' Cup Futurity at Keeneland on October the 8th. And then you have the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and that's on the first Saturday in November. And so now, you know, you got some pretty good-looking horses to look at there. You know, it's not too bad. But again, these horses are young. And when you push them young like that, you know, it makes a difficult time down the road, because basically what you have to do is you got to lay those horses up for a month or two, make sure that they're adjusting to the training and the competition that they're going through. You know, that's what you got to do with that. So I hold very little. I always make notes, but I don't really put a lot of stock into these early races. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile, which is usually crowns the two-year-old champion of the year, very rarely has that two-year-old champion come back and won the Kentucky Derby the next year. You know, because it's just, there's a lot of things that happen, you know, with the horses, you know, coming out to run to the track. It depends on what part of the year that they fall. They can fall in January. They can fall in May. You know, and if they fall, let's say we got a horse that falls in January, one that falls in May, and they both go to the Kentucky Derby. You know, the one that falls in May is actually younger than the one in January. The one in January is 5 months older than that horse, you know, that falls in May. So that makes a big difference, you know, as far as their growth and their training and everything that they do. You know, so that makes it tough. But then when you get into the winter time and you start looking at all the things, you know, that these horses have done, you know, they're learning to train. They're learning to have people ride them. They're learning all different kinds of things. These horses at two are getting on a van for the first time. Some of them are getting on an airplane for the first time. They're training at different, multiple tracks. They're out of their security zone. You know, they're weaned. They wean them from the mares, you know, which is traumatic. You know, when you're taking them out there and throwing them in a field with a bunch of yearlings and they're all picking on each other and they're running up and down playing. And, you know, it's all different for them. Their mind and their bodies go through so much more than any other, you know, thing on the planet. You know, they get three times, you know, their size by a two-year-old season. They learn how to go into starting gates. They learn how to, you know, race in competition by doing, you know, weekly or monthly workouts and everything. There's just so much that they go through, you know, and then they get to the racetracks and they see the crowds and hear the people screaming. And, you know, then on Derby Day, you got 200,000 people, you know, that are in and around Churchill Downs. And, you know, it's just crazy, you know, stuff that they get through. But it's all part of the process. And then when, you know, they get through their two-year-old or three-year-old season, you know, you're looking at Saratoga and Monmouth Park, you know, for races there, New York, California, Kentucky, you know, big stake races, lots of money that they're running for. So it's a pretty, you know, pretty big thing. It's something that you can't fall into a pattern in, you know, like how most of us do. Well, not me, but most people fall into that 9-to-5 Monday through Friday thing. You know, we go through the week Monday through Friday, go out to friends on the weekend, and then, you know, we start all over again on Monday. Same thing with the horses. They go through, you know, the Monday through Friday deal. They race on the weekends. They rest up on Sunday, and then they start all over again the next week. You know, that's just the unfortunate thing that we have to do, you know, when we're working or in the horse business out there with them. So, you know, the thing that I'm saying about tradition is you got to follow, if you're going to follow the horse business, you look at it. Now, we're going to in our in the 2024 Kentucky Derby, how they get there. We're following Windstar Farm and Spindthrift Farm. Windstar is by the numbers, they're getting there, but they're a newer farm than most of the farms like Spindthrift, Claiborne, Adina Springs, that type of thing. So we're following Windstar and Spindthrift, and you'll be amazed at the runners and the things that they do, you know, at their two farms during the year. Then we're following Todd Fletcher. He's our trainer that we're following. Todd's been multiple times. He's been trainer of the year. He's got many, many horses that have won multiple graded stakes races. He's won the Derby twice, which was good. He won with Super Saver and Always Dreaming. He worked for Wayne Glucose, so he knows where to get that business sense and the fire in him, get that going. We're looking at a guy by the name of Steve Smith, Steve Norman. Steve Norman is probably the best blacksmith ever to pick up a hammer. This guy is just unbelievable in what he does. And I worked with him a lot when I was at Windstar and on the track. And he comes in and he looks at a horse and he says, okay, he said, this is what I need to do. He tells that to the trainer or to the owner. And the one thing that I learned from him is you don't tell the blacksmiths what to do. Now, that sounds kind of nasty by saying something like that, but it's not. And here's the point. Because he asked me, what should I do with this horse? And I said, you got to shoe him. And he says, okay, how should I shoe him? I said, Steve, I'm not a blacksmith. I said, you're the blacksmith. I said, your job is to shoe the horse, which you already know. And then, you know, we tell the owner and the trainer, this is what you did to him, and we go from there. I said, I've never shot a horse before. He said, good. He said, we're going to get along good. Because, you know, the last thing you need to do is have an owner or a trainer that come in. They know a lot about shoeing horses. You know, they've shot a lot of, they were with, had horses that been, had shoes put on a lot of times. But they've never really got into it, really studied it like the blacksmith does. And that's what I like about Steve Norman. And from day one, when I came into the business, especially when I got at Windstar, let me tell you something. When he came in, he knew what to do and he did it. That was for sure. And you know that, and they produced millions and millions of dollars in earnings from the horses, but that's what you do there. Is you give that person the responsibility, and then they have to, you know, live up to that responsibility, just like the owner does with the trainer. He gives the trainer the responsibility of training the horse, and that includes getting a blacksmith, you know, to do what needs to be done. And that's why Steve Norman's got a lot of work. He's actually 22 years old, but he looks like he's 60. But he's a good guy. And then the same thing with the feed. We go to the feed. And what I like about this is another tradition that you see is a company called Hallway Feed in Lexington, Kentucky. It's a family-run organization for a long time. They've supplied a lot of stakes winners, derby winners, you name it. And their feed goes all over the world. So that's another thing. And it's kind of like, you know, a tradition. If you feed Hallway Feed, you can get your feed in any country, any racetrack in the world. Hallway Feed will get that feed that you're getting fed here in Florida or Lexington. They will get it to you in Dubai, France, Australia, China. They'll get it to you anywhere you go. You know, and that's a tradition that they do in their family and their business. They're known for getting everybody fed across the world in the equine industry. And then we have our horse transportation, Brookledge Horse Transportation is one of the best companies I've ever seen. And yes, I am biased because I did work for them. But they make all their own trailers. They got qualified drivers that are horsemen and drivers. So they know what to look for. They've got cameras in the trailers. that they can watch the horses as they're going down the road to make sure they don't get in trouble. And another policy that I like is if you want to provide a groom to go with your horse, Brooklands will allow that to happen. So, you know, your horse is comes first with them at Brooklands, and they're the best people in the world, you know, as far as transporting horses. They do airport runs and cross-country runs, too. So, you know, they can cover everything that you do there. And then we get down to the equine sales. You got to have horses to give to your trainers and your owners to get, give, and, you know, and race. And I tell you, the sales are really good. The Keeneland sales are the best. They're going on now. They're live on my website now on intv.org, the Keeneland sales. It's the yearling sales. And over the last 10 days or so, they've had a multiple million-dollar winners, horses being bought, paying $1 million, $1.3 million, $2 million, $3 million, even had one for $3 million. So the market is really good. And those sales, they go from really inexpensive horses to $3 million horses. And the greatest thing about that is every horse in that sales ring today and all week long, they all got a shot at the Kentucky Derby coming up in 2 years, every one of them. And, you know, when they get in that gate at the starting gate at Churchill Downs, those horses don't know where they were born, you know, any of them, how much they paid for them. They don't know nothing when they get in that gate. And it really doesn't matter, you know, whether you've been born in Kentucky, Florida, California, Europe, wherever, they all have the same chance to get to the Derby. And so the sales are really important for the owners, because you can do pretty good, and you got to be business sense, you know, have business sense and, you know, try to find a place for it in your racing program. And it's really good to do that. And the thing that's really kind of taken notice here in the last few years, there's a company called MyRacehorse.com. And you can go in and buy a micro share in a horse. And I've seen micro shares in a horse go anywhere from $39 up to, you know, a lot of money. You know, it's just amazing. And the great thing about MyRacehorse.com is that you can go out and you can go to the races and whatever horse you own a part of, you go to the races, you get to go to the clubhouse, you get to go to the paddock, you get to go to the barn section. You're just as much an owner as the guy that owns 99% of that horse. And that's really turned, you know, things around, you know, for it. Yeah, because if you got a micro share on a horse, you know, you can get your friends together and you can take them and go over to the clubhouse at the races, take them out for a nice dinner. You can go over and see your horse train in the morning. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do. And what I like about MyRacehorse.com is you don't have any, once you pay that money down, you know, to MyRacehorse.com, there's no maintenance fees. You don't have to worry about feed, shoes, transportation. You don't have to worry about nothing. You know, but yet you're still an owner. And so that's really, you know, one way of owning a horse where you can participate in it. And hey, I suggest to you now, go out there and check MyRacehorse.com out. You know what? You could buy a 2-year-old that they got running now that could run in a Derby next year. You know, authentic. They won the Triple Crown, or won the Derby up there. Authentic. He had over 5,000 owners. Nevertheless, they owned. So how many people, you know, walking around that can say, hey, I own a Derby winner? Well, I know 5,000 of them that can say that. That's for sure. You know, so the sales are really important that we do. And like I said, the Derby prep races, they've already started. They'll run all the way through April. And literally every state, you know, we're looking at Arkansas and Arkansas Derby. There's 3 or 4 prep races that you can earn points in that. You know, Louisiana Derby, Keeneland. They've got the Breeders' Cup Futurity. You know, they got all kinds of races there all across the country. And a lot of times, you know, if you dislike to be around horses and everything, it's kind of fun to get a little pegboard up, you know, that you put up, and you can find out who won the prep race that week here at our website, and, you know, kind of keep following, track them, see where they go, how they got there. You know, was it through Kentucky or Arkansas, California, you know, New York, Illinois? How did they get there? That's what this show's all about, how they get there and everything. So that's always, you know, thing to follow, or the prep races. And then the most interesting one that I find, and it's all right, it's okay to do film this. That was the tough part that I had about filming it. This one section, it's the only part that is difficult in this whole documentary, and that's the decision to run in the Kentucky Derby. Well, you talk about making a decision of a lifetime. It's that, you know, the owner has the ultimate decision to make it in the Derby. And he's got a lot of things to think about. He said, if I run my horse in the Derby and he wins it, the potential for him being a multi-million dollar stallion is right there. If he runs second in the Derby, okay, his chances of being a stallion, you know, it's a high end tag there. Doable. If he runs third, you got to really start looking at where he goes from that point on. And same thing with the Derby winner and the Preakness winner. You got to think about where you're going with them. If you run second in the Derby, you got a chance to come out and, you know, say, hey, I'm good. I beat the Derby winner in the Preakness. You know, same with third place. They do the same thing. But not many of the horses in the Derby go on to the Preakness. And then you got to think about the Belmont and the Triple Crown. The Belmont's a mile and a half. Very few horses out of the Kentucky Derby make it to the Belmont because it's a whole different set of training. It's in a 3 week or three and five week of the Preakness and the Derby. So you got to look at that. So there's so many things that this owner has to do and how he has to think. Especially the running in the Derby is the hardest decision to make of all the horses' career. That's the hardest decision to make. Because after the Preakness, after the Derby, you know, you go to the Preakness, you don't want to go to the Preakness. You got a lot of, you know, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 races, $1 million races. You got the Breeders' Cup. You got a lot of races that you can come back and prove your horse in. And that's what an owner always has to think about, is proving his horse how good he is. But again, there's a lot of traditions, you know, that we talked about today that we skimmed over. You know, you think about it. What's your tradition for the Derby, the Preakness, the Belmont, and the Breeders' Cup? And if, you know, if you don't have any tradition, what's your tradition for the Super Bowl party? Did you have the Indy 500, you know, the Daytona 500? You see the whole theme that we have here, how important the word tradition is? You know, tradition's a real deal because it happens every day, every day in our life. We have traditions, but how big and how important is your traditions for you? Think about it. What's your next tradition? You know, are you doing any traditional things this week? You know, weekends here. Think about it. Okay, this is Scott Miller, and I'm okay today. I'm done, ready to go out and do my equine traditions tomorrow. And by the way, we got Palm Beach Downs back open. We retained the lease on that. Palm Beach Downs is back in the hands of Sunshine Meadows and Brandon Mills, and Todd Pletcher will be back, and they'll be grinding out all those horses, and he's got some Derby horses that are at Palm Beach Downs, and we'll see you the first Saturday in May. Have a good weekend.